Welcome to the Living Waters Church Podcast.
Next week, we're beginning a new series called Neighbor. And throughout the month of September, we're going to be reflecting on the theme of neighborliness. And we're going to be looking at that theme through a text found in Luke's Gospel, which is the Good Samaritan story that Jesus told. And that's one of the most famous stories of all that Jesus told. And we're going to be reflecting on it through the whole month. So we won't just talk about it for one Sunday, but we'll talk about it for the whole month of September. So I'd encourage you to maybe begin reading that passage, that story in the Gospel of Luke this week, even to just remind yourself of it. And we're going to get into it next week together. I'm looking forward to that. We are going to be today, however, in the Psalms. And in particular, we're going to be in Psalm 19. Psalm 19 is one of those poems that starts in an expansive way. It takes us to the outer reaches of things. And as it moves along, it draws us closer and closer to the heart of things. It begins with grand imagination, and it ends with intimacy and vulnerability. It starts with observation and reflection, and it closes with response. There's three movements in the psalm, and we're going to look at each of the three and how they work together and what they all say as they come together to us today. We begin with the movement found in verses 1 to 6, and it begins this way. Let me read it for us. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. Day after day, they continue to speak. And night after night, they make him known. They speak without a word or sound. Their voice is never heard. Yet their message has gone throughout the earth, and their words to all the world. God has made a home in the heavens for the sun. It bursts forth like a radiant bridegroom after his wedding. It rejoices like a great athlete eager to run the race. The sun rises at one end of the heavens and follows its course to the other end. Nothing can hide from its heat. Space is beautiful and fascinating. And I grew up in a home where space was celebrated. And one of the ways it was celebrated is in the evenings, I heard over and over again, space, the final frontier. And I grew up on a healthy diet of Gene Roddenberry and his imagination for what could be out there, what might be out there. But space is beautiful. It is fascinating. It causes us to wonder. If you find yourself standing on a beach in the winter somewhere like Tofino, where there's not a lot of city light and the skies are clear, you might look up and wonder at what's going on out there. And you might start asking deep questions of life and meaning and your own existence. And people have been doing that for as long as people have been around. Ancient people did that. They stood under the sky in the day and the sky in the night, and they looked up and they tried to make sense of things. They tried to understand who they were and where they were and what all of this was for. The psalmist is one of those people, one of those ancient people. And he's part of the culture and the heritage and the tribe of Israel. And they had a very particular way of viewing what was up there and out there and understanding what was up there and out there. And it was quite different from what many of the other ancient peoples believed. Most people looked up into the firmament, And they imagined that perhaps these points of light, and particularly the sun, was something to be worshipped, something to be appeased. And so there was, in effect, in much of ancient history and ancient peoples, pantheism, where they're looking at what is going on out there. They're either worshiping the skies, the sun, stars themselves, or they're attributing the skies and the suns to particular gods that represent them. The psalmist's view is different than that. As an ancient Israelite, the psalmist believes that there is one creator God who is not personalized and known through the sun, but is someone who has made what we look up to, what we see, what we reflect on. The psalmist believes that the luminaries, the stars in the sky, the sun, are not things to be worshipped in and of themselves, but they are things that are worshipping the God that has made them, and they point us to that God. So this psalm begins with speaking language, where the psalmist says that the heavens proclaim, the skies display. Day after day they continue to speak. They pour out. And they're not using words, says the psalmist, but they're declaring it in what they are, as the sky, as the stars, as the sun. The psalmist says that the heavens proclaim the glory of God. And one way of thinking about the glory of God as we read the Bible is that the glory of God is God's reputation. It's God's character on display. So the psalmist is saying, when we look up, we can see something of God's character on display, something of what God is like. It directs us to his reality, to his existence. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul writes in the beginning of his letter to the churches in Rome. He says, everyone on the planet can look around and notice that something has put us all here in this beautiful, wondrous, ever-changing, incredible space that we call Earth, and beyond that, as we now understand, that we call our universe. So the psalmist says that the things that we look at, the things that give light to us and illuminate our lives, are not things in and of themselves to be worshipped, but they are worshipping, and also they direct us as human beings to worship God. They point us towards who God is and something of what God is like. Alfred Lord Tennyson wrote in a poem called A Higher Pantheism, "The sun, the moon, the stars, the seas, the hills, and the plains, are not these, O soul, the vision of him who reigns?" And in that he means the sun is not the vision of God, but it is the vision, it is the idea, it is the dream of God. And when you look at someone's vision, what they've created, it tells you something of who they are and what they're like. So the psalmist begins in this first beautifully poetic movement by saying that the sky is speaking, but moves on from there. He says it gets better into this second movement. Beginning in verse 7, he says, "The instructions of the Lord are perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The commandments of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are clear, giving insight for living. Reverence for the Lord is pure, lasting forever. The laws of the Lord are true. Each one is fair. They are more desirable than gold, even the finest gold. They are sweeter than honey, even honey dripping from the comb. They are a warning to your servant, a great reward for those who obey them." If we're honest, when we read a psalm like this, the second movement from the first seems like a bit of a strange turn. At first, the psalmist is going on about the beauty of the heavens and the proclamation of the sun and the stars, and it's all quite poetic and wonderful and imaginative. And then he dives in saying words like instructions, decrees, and commandments, and commands, and reverence, and law. And we go, well, that all sounds a bit constrictive. Can we go back to that nice language about how beautiful creation is? Let's have a little bit more of that, Mr. Psalmist. But the psalmist speaks glowingly of all of these things, of the instruction, of the decree, of the commandment, of law. Because the psalmist has a distinct cosmology from those who are living around him, a distinct cosmology, a distinct understanding of how the universe works. And the psalmist also has a distinct understanding of how they relate to God versus the other people they're surrounded by. The other people who looked at the world as a sun to be worshipped and a star that represents a god, all of these things to them meant that the gods were typically distant and often uninterested and sometimes even quite hostile. But the psalmist has a different understanding of the God that they worship. They believe that there is a distinct relationship that they have with their God. And we pick up on that clue in the names that are utilized in the psalm. You'll notice in the first movement that the word God is used. And that word in the original language is Elohim. And it references a God who is a creator and a sustainer and a powerful being who makes everything. And that fits in the first movement. But when we get into this second movement, we see that the term for God is now Lord. And that's rooted in Israel's understanding of God speaking personally to humanity and revealing himself as Yahweh, the personal name given to Moses, as well as God's words to Moses, or we would understand in the Old Testament as the law, speaking specifically into humanity. So the psalmist believes God to not be far away or distant, disinterested, or hostile, but as a God who actually speaks and engages with, communicates with, and gives to humanity. And so that's why the psalmist speaks of the instruction, the decree, the commandments, the words, the law, all things that we could sum up as saying the words of God, the language of God to us, speaks of it positively. It says this is a gift to us as human beings. This gives us joy. It revives us when God speaks and shows himself to be close and not near. It makes us wise. It gives us insight for living. And the psalmist says that these things are sweeter than honey, better than gold, a great reward. Because God is not far away, making us guess, but he's close and he's spoken clearly, telling us who he is and then telling us who we are. And beyond that, how we are to be who we are, what it means to be truly human. Sarah and I, when we spent our time in Europe, moving from city to city, we found ourselves, obviously, in many airports and often even more train stations. And if you've ever been at a train station in a foreign country, you realize very, very quickly that instruction and clarity is not something that constricts, it's actually something that helps. We want to make sure that we're on the right platform, that we're getting on the right train, going in the right way. And so we're quite thankful for the clarity of those words, of the designers of these train stations and airports who are willing to make clear to us where to go, how to get to where we're going, and to make sure we're going the right way and not the wrong way. And maybe that's one way of thinking about God's words to humanity throughout Israel's history. Here's a God who is making clear, who is speaking, who is directing in our history, in our human history. This is the way to go. This is the right way. This is the way that you want to go. This is the way that you're designed to go. Decide that you know how to do it by yourself, and you might find yourself on the wrong train, going the wrong way. Of course, when we think about the words of God throughout human history through the life and the culture of the Israelite people, we eventually, on this side of the cross and the resurrection, have to think about Jesus, who is the fulfillment. Jesus comes along. He is the Word in flesh and blood. And Jesus says, I haven't come to do away with God's words. I've come to fulfill it. I've come to sum it up. And that's why in John's gospel, we hear him say that the glory of God is seen clearly through Jesus' death on the cross. That through Jesus, we see God's glory or God's reputation most obviously, most clearly. So in a sense, one of the ways we can think about Jesus is the fellow passenger on the train platform who comes alongside, puts an arm around us and says, let me show you the right way. Who picks up our luggage, who loads it onto the right car and helps us go in the right direction. And of course, the more that we get to know Jesus, the closer we become with him, the more we realize he's not just a fellow passenger who shows us the right way and lives a wonderful, beautiful example, but he's actually the designer of the train station in itself. And if we're to listen to his words in John, we might even understand that he's not just a fellow passenger on the train, he's actually the train itself. I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. So the psalmist says that the sky is speaking, that God is speaking. And one other poet, Christopher Smart, in his poem, A Song to David, says, glorious the sun in mid-career. Glorious the assembled fires appear. Glorious, more glorious is the crown of him that brought salvation down. The sky is speaking, God is speaking. Culminating in Jesus. The psalm takes a turn in our final movement here, where we hear the human speaking. The psalmist has been observing and reflecting, considering, and then he's moved to response. And we hear him say this, how can I know all the sins lurking in my heart? Cleanse me from these hidden faults. Keep your servant from deliberate sins. Don't let them control me. Then I will be free of guilt and innocent of great sin. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. In this moment, the psalmist moves from outward to inward. Upon reflecting on nature and creation, on reflecting on God's personal interest and words spoken to him, he can't help but take all of that in and recognize that he himself, as a part of the created order, is responsible to respond as the stars do. But as he recognizes that, he also realizes that there are things in his words lurking, things that are hidden. There are errors in his ways. He's mindful that he's gotten on to the wrong train and gone in the wrong direction from time to time and needs help. There's an interesting moment in the psalm where we read words like hidden and lurking, and there's a sense that the psalmist is inviting cleansing, perhaps even inviting light to shine in and dispel a sense of darkness. And that loops back to the beginning of the psalm where we read in verse 6, nothing can hide from the sun's heat. So there's a little bit of poetic dance going on there where the psalmist is almost saying, as the sun fills the earth and covers the earth and illuminates the earth, O God, would you do that in your light in the inner parts of me? In an incredibly tender and vulnerable moment, the psalmist says, these sins, these errors, these things lurking in me, don't let them control me. Don't let them control me. The psalmist is saying, in essence, I don't want to be controlled by my error. I don't want to be controlled by what I think is right or what my outside culture tells me is right. I want to be controlled by, directed by, guided by, shaped by the God that made me. I want to be on the right train. I want to go in the right way. And in the end, the psalmist draws all of this together with a hope and a prayer. It says, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. And it's almost as if we begin back in the opening phrases of Psalm 19 again, where the psalmist has used speaking language, saying that the sun and the stars and the sky proclaim who God is, display God's reputation and God's character. And then at the very end of the psalm, the poet says, and may my life do the same thing. May my words, may what I speak, may what I pour out, may how I live be pleasing to you, God, be worship to you, God, proclaiming, declaring, displaying, making clear who you are. Astronomers tell us that the closest stars that we can see with our naked eye, other than the sun, obviously, are about 4 or 5 light years away, meaning that it takes 4 or 5 years for us to see the light of those nearest stars. So the light that we're seeing was first emitted 4 or 5 years ago. That's how a light year works. I'm not an astronomer. But I understand that much. Astronomers also tell us that we can see in the night sky on a good evening stars that are up to hundreds of light years away, and the furthest that we can see with our naked eye are 2,000 light years away. Beyond that, of course, we can see even more with the telescopes that we had, which is, it's almost hard to comprehend. So that means that on a good day, with just your naked eye, if you're standing up without a lot of city light and you're looking into the night sky, the light that you're seeing from some of those stars was given off hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. That you're, in a sense, when you're looking into the sky, staring into history itself. There's a couple of things that I'd like to draw out of the psalm just as we conclude. The first is that God is speaking. And that's the biblical story. That's our story as Christians, that God is speaking clearly through what we're surrounded by. That God has spoken into human history and made himself clear to a people who can demonstrate who he is. And God has spoken most clearly, most powerfully, and yet at the same time, most subtly through Jesus, who lived a short life and an even shorter public life. But that life, that drop of a life of God into our world, has shaped and molded our world in ways that we're not even aware of day to day often. God is speaking throughout time and history. God has spoken clearly through Jesus. One of my friends like to say that when you wonder what God is like, don't guess. He's made it clear. It's through Jesus. And God is speaking now. So maybe some of us today have a sense of that, that we found ourselves in a place where we sense God speaking, a God who is drawing close to us and is encouraging us to draw close to him, to reach out to him as the psalmist has reached out, saying, I can see that you're here. I can see that you are involved. I can see that inside of me, I need help. Maybe there would be some of us here today who would say, oh God, would you help me find the right platform? Would you help me get on the right train? Because I'm sick and tired of going the wrong way. Would you show me the right way? Would you take me in the right direction? I want to let you know today that you can do that, that he will listen and he will respond, that this is a God who speaks, but in a sense, he's not a God that shouts. He'll speak, he invites, he draws, but he won't force himself on us. And that's a loving God. That's a God who encourages us to receive him, not a God who forces himself on us. So I encourage you to receive him today. The second thing I'd like to draw out is that we were made to speak. We were made to speak. That we were made to shine. That we were made to declare, to display, to make clear who God is, what God's like through our lives. And so maybe, as part of creation, maybe there's more to that than sometimes we imagine. Maybe there's more to that than we give ourselves credit for. Human beings, we're told in Genesis, are both central to creation and the pinnacle of creation, meaning that we matter to God more than stars. That we matter to God, that we have a position in the universe, our given position by our Creator, that is unique in creation. That we have a place, that we have a purpose, and we have an influence. And so maybe when we live, when we speak, when we act, there's more to that than we might imagine. Maybe our lives are less like an Instagram story, which is just here one moment and kind of gone the next and no one pays attention to. I pay attention to some of your Instagram stories. But maybe our lives are more like starlight that go further than we can possibly imagine, that will reach into years and to decades and into hundreds of years further than we can possibly imagine, both as a human collective, maybe as a church community, but even as an individual. Maybe your words, your life, your action matters now an awful lot, but what if it matters even more into eternity? Who knows where it will go? Who knows what it will do? God is speaking, and we were made to speak. To be honest, my first sermon back, so I'm sorry if it's a bit heavy. I've been thinking about some things. But I wonder if we could conclude today with praying together, quite simply, a shortening of this psalm, an amalgamation of some of the key moments in this psalm. And if you're in the moment today and feeling that you want to respond to God, that you go, God, I do believe God is speaking to me, and I would like to speak back, I'd like to receive, this is something you can pray. And if you're in the place today where you're going into a new season, it's fall, you're finding yourself into new places, meeting new people, and you go in there wondering if really you're going to make a difference or if your life matters at all, you can pray this as well. It's a wonderful thing to pray as we go into a new season and compute who we are and where we're going and why we're there. So maybe we could we stand together? And it's going to be on the screen. We can pray this all together as we close. The heavens proclaim the glory of God. The skies display his craftsmanship. The words of the Lord are right, reviving the soul, bringing joy to the heart, giving insight for living. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock, my redeemer. And we said together, amen. Bless you. Have a great rest of your Sunday.